Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Abney, and I want to thank you for joining me here for another exciting episode here at Precious Predicaments at Blog Talk Radio. Hopefully, my cousin will be joining me soon as I, again, am experiencing technical difficulties. I had to call AT&T and fuss at them for the last 30 minutes, and apparently they still was not able to take care of my internet because my computer is saying there's no internet connection. But, as usual, I'm going to let it do what it do and make it work by the grace of God. So, by saying that, I want to first give honor to God for basically waking me up this morning with all the obstacles that I have to go through. I press my way through. Now, today's topic is a very interesting topic. And the interesting part about this is when it comes to learning a new skill or developing coping skills, often we do what feels good, what feels comfortable, what's a ritual, and we all have our way of doing things. So today's show is not to offend anyone. Today's show is not to basically try to tell people what's right, what's wrong, or things of that nature. It is basically to provide coping skills. It is basically to assist individuals where they may be struggling with certain things. So today's topic has to do with understanding the process of grief, loss, and mourning. Now, when we talk about that topic, a lot of times people don't want to talk about that. Now, as we, and many of us have, all of us, have exited 2017 and we're entering 2018, many individuals are no longer amongst the living and have transitioned on. Now, when we talk about this transition and you're talking about a loss, the loss don't always just have to be the death of someone or the transitioning of someone. It could basically be the loss of a pet. It could be the loss of a relationship or even a job. And we all will go through some type of grief. But as we're talking about this, we're going to not only just be talking about the grieving process, but the mourning process and how to deal with that loss. Because a lot of times people get stuck. Now, in situations where there are individuals who have lost loved ones, many times individuals are often reminded of the memories that they once shared. And when one experiences a loss of any kind, it can be expressed in several different ways. So what we're going to be talking about today is, I was on the phone talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about how many people cry when they lose something. Now, crying, as we know, is a natural response. However, what if you don't cry? How do you know the difference between grieving and mourning? And when I talk about grieving and mourning, that's interesting because as I was doing my research and looking up the difference, I learned a lot of valuable information that I want to share. And one of the things that I learned was grief, as we know, is a natural response to a loss. And it's the emotional suffering that you feel when something or someone you love has been taken away. Now, many associate grieving with the death of a loved one, which is often the cause of the most intense type of grief. However, again, any loss can cause grief. Going back to a divorce, not only would a divorce, a relationship breakup, and a loss of job. But what causes grief is not clear. And what causes prolonged or complicated grief can also vary. Now, I want to go back to that because those of you that know me personally know that I have just experienced the loss of several different people that were close to me. You know, first I had to deal with the loss of or the death of my son's father, and then it was my board member whom I've known for over 30-something years. Then it was my stepfather's sister, and then it was my father, and then I learned that recently one of my church members just passed away. So it's like every day we're seeing on the news somebody has either been murdered or they're passing on. And a lot of times many people don't know what to do. And we always say grief. Now, would mourning as opposed to grief refer to how someone may feel as it relates to the loss of that loved one? Mourning is the awkward expression of the loss. And mourning usually involved culturally, as determined by certain rituals that helped the bereaved individual make sense of their loved one's life, and it also gives structure to what can feel what they call like a very confusing time. Because what happens is when individuals are going through something, a lot of times they don't know what to do. They don't know how to express those feelings. And because they don't know, they do what normally makes them feel good or what they're used to doing. So when we start talking about that, and you're talking about that internal pain of grief, we know that that is a more universal phenomenon in regards to how people mourn. And how they mourn is also influenced the process of how one grieves. So if you want to join in on a conversation, you can join in by calling the number that is either listed, and I'm trying to find this number because, as I indicated earlier, I'm kind of challenged today because all of my devices are not working. But you can call in at 516-387-1914 if you want to call in on and join us with the conversation. Now, because my cousin have not called me, I don't know if he is experiencing some technical difficulties himself, but I am going to call him. Let me give him a call because he know good and well he better not be standing me up. Okay, please excuse the silence.
Hello?
You forget about me?
No, I didn't forget about you, girl. I'm ready. I fell asleep.
You know I got you on radio right now. I got to put the phones together. So while you fell asleep on me, okay.
Yeah, right. Get up early.
Oh, my gosh. I know that feeling. I definitely know that feeling. Well, I want to thank you for joining me. And as usual, I enjoy when I have you on the radio with me. So we're going to basically help the listeners as we're talking about understanding the process of grief, loss, and mourning. And I want you to tell the listeners who you are and basically tell them a little bit about yourself.
Well, thanks, Jeanette. I'm Cedric Boyd. I'm a writer. I've written two books, one entitled The Good Wolf and one entitled Randall Whitmore. The Good Wolf I wrote right after my father passed away, and I dedicated to him. So that was my process of grieving and like working through some things by being able to channel that and put it into a book that people seem to love.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And you know what I want to say to you, cousin? I had the book because I was reading the book in my time. That's when I was out of town. And I had the book. I said, you know what? I forgot to get his autograph. So I still don't understand the situation with the neighbor, but I understand that he never really got with the neighbor as I was skimming through things. But I was like, oh, okay. I was talking about Cedric. Cedric showed doing a lot of cussing and fussing and but it was definitely an interesting read, and I'm very proud of you. And I know when we were out of town, you did stop by Tyler Perry. So if he don't get back with you, we got to make sure that we make that happen.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm gonna have to, you
been hollering about when am I gonna make it a movie, and this and that. So hopefully, maybe we can get that done.
Well, we're gonna have to get it done. I'm gonna have to contact Yana Van Zandt and get in touch with Oprah. Or use some of my contacts or something. So those of you that are out there, we got a writer on the line, and he's ready to write and tell some stories. But and I also want to thank you for taking up for me today, but I don't even know why you were doing that, so we ain't going to even go there. So.
yeah, glad you called because I was passed out.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so when we talk about understanding the process of grief, loss, and mourning. And you indicated that you wrote a book after the passing of your father. And I tell individuals when they talk about, well, Jeanette, where did J.A. Precious come from? J.A. is just Jeanette Abney. Precious was actually my mother's nickname. So my mother always wanted me to start a scholarship fund for children that were in sports that weren't able to play sports because of financial difficulties. So instead of starting a scholarship, what I did was I just opened up a whole nother company. and started a whole other corporation, and I just named it J.A. Precious, Inc., located in Oceanside. Then when I became a radio host, and I wanted to be the Black Lucy show because I'm always doing something silly, the lady, when I was with the other company, they said, okay, we're going to call it Precious Predicaments, where individuals can talk about their precious, you know, moments or things that are precious to them, and then they can speak with the therapist and help them to transition or to assist them with their therapeutic needs. And that's where Precious Predicaments came from, because that was my way of giving back. And that's also my way of, you know, mourning and remembering and talking about my mom, because every time I talk about some of these topics, it can relate to some of the things that I either experienced, grew up, or had knowledge, wisdom, or discernment about. So just to let people know, that is a stage of how you mourn, grieve, and actually give back.
Now, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, I thought I shared that with you.
No, I didn't know that's why the show is called Precious Predicaments. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. That's where it came from. That's exactly where it came from. Precious was my mom's nickname. So Carter called her Ree, Jimmy called her Precious.
Oh, okay.
So, and the people that worked with her called her Precious. Now, when we talk about grief, and I want to say, too, we almost had the 10-year anniversary of her passing, because she passed away in February of 2008. So we're almost at 10 years.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long.
I know. Time flies. Now, when we talk about grief, I want to let the listeners know, as we talk about grief, what is normal grieving and what are the stages of grief? Now, we know that grief is a natural response to losing someone or something that's important to you. Now, individuals may feel a variety of emotions. They can feel sadness. They can feel loneliness. And they can also feel anger. You might experience it for a number of different reasons. Maybe that loved one could have passed on, or the relationship ended, like I said, lost your job, and or other life changes like a chronic illness, or people move to a new home, or a lot of things can lead to grief. Now, everyone grieves differently, and that's why this show was important. And I wanted to, and Cedric, you know, we had talked about this before we wind up having to leave the state, because I wanted to bring this up because people were experiencing the loss of family members and pets and jobs and transitioning, and some people losing weight, you know, whatever that, you know, whatever the loss is. But I wanted to talk about that because when you start talking about these stages and changes and how people grieve differently, sometimes it's people expect for you to do something different. Or I was looking at one of my friends, and I call him my friend. His name is Roy Colbert. He does a lot in the industry, and he put on Facebook a documentary, what I put on my Facebook, about a gang movie or a documentary he did with Ice-T. And I was looking at that mentality. And one of the things that I heard one of the gang members say is, killing you, basically, when you kill somebody, that person don't suffer. They suffer when you kill their family members. And a lot of times, individuals don't realize that life is precious.
Right.
And when you take someone or someone loses someone, that anger, that revenge, and I was wondering, why do people, when they go to funerals, where does that mentality come from? And a lot of that, like I said, people grieve differently. Now, some individuals may understand your emotions, but the bottom line is you have to take care of yourself, you have to seek support, and you can heal. A lot of times individuals get stuck, they feel like their life is over, they want to die. And the one thing I want to say about my mother had this thing, and I'm not going to use the B word like she did with your mama when she's talking about the book. But that's a whole other story. When my mother was going through her transition with her cancer, my mother told me, "You bees can't live without me." My mother thought her passing was going to break us, because that was her way. She was already scared. She already knew she was sick. But she wanted us to believe that our life was going to end when hers ended. And I was like, the devil is a liar. because I'm going to get through this. I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to heal. Now, burying my mother was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life. It was rough. Cedric, I was bullying folks. I'm telling people what to do. I'm getting into it with the pastor. You know, I'm at the mortuary telling my mother's boyfriend, you going to have a room here, too. I mean, it was a mess.
Get another slab for it.
Man, Cedric, they don't know I've been redeemed. I've been delivered.
Right.
Ooh, they
right.
was really pissing me off.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I want to give the listeners some information because, like I said, you can heal. But when you start talking about the stages of grief, there are different stages. Now, as I was doing my research, I saw the 5 stages. But then I was like, something is missing with these 5 stages. And then I found something that talked about the 7 stages, which I liked that better, because they brought up the stage that I knew one of them was missing. So I want to give the listeners some information in regards to what are the stages of grief. Now, when, like I said, when you lose someone or someone transition or something is taken from you, your feelings may happen in phases as you come to terms with your loss. The problem is you cannot control that process. Sometimes we try to either hold back the tears, we try to hold back our emotions, we try to make it seem like we're okay. And even when I do therapy, because I am a licensed therapist, when individuals say I'm fine, and I heard the analogy or being the acronyms mentioned before, I say, oh, you effed up, insecure, needy, and emotional, but you fine. You know, so we'd be like, oh, I'm okay, oh, I'm great, oh, and you're lying to yourself. Because the thing is, like I said, you can't control that process, even though we try. But it's helpful to know the reasons behind your feelings. And that's, again, is what we're here to talk about, is knowing the reason why you're feeling the way you feel. Now, doctors have identified what's called the common stages of grief, and even not only doctors, they did it with Kubler-Ross, and, you know, someone else was also involved in that. The first stage that they put with the 5 stages is denial. When you first learn of a loss, it's normal to think, this is not happening. You may feel shocked, numbed. This is a temporary way to deal with the rush of the overwhelming emotion, and it's a defense mechanism. And when I was watching that documentary about the gang members, and, you know, the drive-bys, and, you know, and people's families screaming and hollering, oh, no, and, you know, that denial. Tell the listeners a little bit from your perspective, Cedric, when it comes to denial.
Well, I could just kind of go with my own experiences. Like my brother-in-law died last year, right before the new year. And like even me and Jamie talk about, he was young and, you know, he was a good man and he had a really great life, great family. And you can tell by the way, his funeral was, there was overwhelming support. There was, the place was packed. He's just a really impactful man. And just the way my wife handled it at times, she was like, well, I got to call Peter. And, you know, because they were still dealing with her mom. And, you know, as folks get older, you know, they get a little more fragile. So there's certain things you have to deal with. But she would catch herself saying, like, oh, well, I got to call Peter, and wait a minute, I can't call Peter, you know, because he's not here, and it just wasn't processing. And I found myself doing the same thing with my dad, you know, like, you know, he always bounced around and did this and that, and I always expected him to just, like, show up on a bus or a plane or something and call me at, like, 3 in the morning and call, like, I knew he was coming to come pick him up, you
mm-hmm.
know. Like, he would call, like, hey, man, I'm here. Like, you're where? Did you call me before you were coming? Or, you know, be like, like, I just know he's supposed to be here. You know,
mm-hmm.
he would do that all the time. And Jay was like, what's going on with your dad? I was like, he just does that. You know, I have to wake up in the middle of the night and just pick him up from wherever. Like, hey, man, how you doing? I'm like, Dad, could you call first? So, like, for me, it was like, well, he went away. And he'll be showing up again, you know, on a bus or something with his golf clubs, and I just have to pick him up. So it was tough, you know, just processing the fact that he's no longer here.
Yeah. And you know what? And it's interesting because when I was driving from Mississippi back to New Orleans to catch my flight. The night before, I had a dream, and I had a dream about my last husband's mother. And it was really weird because I was driving. I was like, dang, I'm an orphan. I don't have no mother. I don't have no father. And I had a dream, and in my dream, I drove down the street. She was watering her grass, and it freaked me out. I'm like, wait a minute. I know this woman is dead. I went to your funeral. I did all of this, and she kept coming, or she came to me in a dream just to let me know I'm here when you need me. And sometimes that denial or just that shock, in, you know, which is part of the seventh stage of the other one, is that shock or disbelief. Like, I don't believe this is happening. Now, the next one is the anger. And I want to go back to the denial. Sometimes individuals could be in denial for a long time.
Right.
And there's really no time period or no phase, but the thing is, if you know you are still in denial and you know this person is gone, I've heard people say that they went into their father's home and their father had like a shrine of all of the mother's pictures. And it was spooky and it was scary. Or, you know, that's when things become, you know, it can be healthy, but you got to also know when it's starting to become unhealthy as it becomes a denial process, because it is a defense mechanism. And we use defense mechanisms because we hurt. We use defense mechanism because it protects us. That's okay, but you just don't want to stay in that stage. The second stage is anger. Now, anger, as the reality sets in, when you're faced with the pain of your loss, you may feel frustrated and helpless, and these feelings later turn into anger. You might direct it towards other people. You could direct it towards a higher power because people get mad at God, or life in general. To be angry with a loved one who has died and left you alone is also natural. And I've seen it, and I want to talk about the stages or the different types of anger, because people have anger style. Some individuals, when they get angry, they have what's called the bottle and cap. They bottle it all up, put a cap on it. Some individuals have what's called the bottle and blast. They bottle it up, poof, they go off. You don't even know what the hell they're going off for. Some individuals have what's called the TNT. When they get angry, they're like a time bomb. Some individuals get angry, and they will give you the silent treatment. Some individuals will displace the anger, and we could do what's called the kick the dog, where you take the anger out on someone or something else, but it's still anger. So it's very important to know your anger style and the anger style of another. Because, like I said, when you feel that someone left you, you're going to be angry. But even biblically, they say it's okay to be angry, but sin not. It doesn't mean you have to go seek revenge. And I want to talk about this one. I don't know if you've ever seen Kevin Hart when he did his stand-up comedy, when his mom passed away of breast cancer, basically. I don't want to say what type because I don't want to misspeak.
Right.
But when the uncle was at the funeral and he said that his uncle was talking about, man, who did this, man? We're going to go get him. We're going to go get him. And he was like, well, she died of cancer. Man, we're going to jack cancer up. I'm like, for real? For real, Lord?
Yeah.
For real? You know, but people experience that, and they want to be angry at somebody. And I also want to say, when we're talking about just the anger, is for some reason, when we're looking at the loss of someone, we look at their life if it's a child versus a young adult versus if it's a senior citizen. We still go grieve, but sometimes we base it up on the age of the person too.
Right.
And I've worked with, and I do grief counseling for individuals that have lost loved ones. I've worked with several parents that have had stillborn children, individuals that were basically victim of crimes. So I've done a lot of therapy with individuals that have experienced some type of loss, even if it is a loss of a job. And that anger is one of the areas that I viewed where most individuals, they become stuck. They want to be mad, because being mad and being angry makes sense to them versus dealing with the loss of the loved one.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is bargaining. Now, during the bargaining stage, individuals dwell on what they could have done to have prevented the loss. The common thoughts are if only or what if. You may also try to strike a deal with your higher power. I was on the phone last night with my friend, and he was. We got into this discussion in regards to the difference between grief and mourning. And I know, to my opinion, he was looking at it from a biblical perspective, and I was looking at it from a psychological perspective. And I sent him that Mad TV clip where the woman was at her husband's funeral, and people kept watching her, and she was like, "Lord, take me, Lord, Lord, take me." And then they had the thing where Jesus came in, and she was like, "I was just playing, no, Lord," you know. And it was funny because people go through that bargaining, say, "Lord, I swear I'll do this. Lord, just bring a bed." Look, and then right. You be like, "I better watch what I say." So, when you dealt with the passing of your father, did you do the get stuck, or how did you handle or process the bargaining stage?
You know, I guess because Dad was a little bit older. You know, Dad was 71, I think, when he passed away. And, you know, I was kind of okay with it, even though 71 is still fairly young, you know, but it's like Harrison Ford said, it's not the age, it's the mileage.
Correct.
You know, so Lou got a lot of mileage out of that body, you know. he got full use of that body and mind, you know. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel like he got cheated, you know. I guess it's a little different when somebody's young and passes away that you're so saddened by the potential, you know. But I feel like with my father, it was more of a, you know, a natural process of life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I felt very fortunate. You know, I worked with a lot of young people in my career that have never known their fathers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if they knew them, they didn't have a good relationship with them. And, you know, their father didn't have their back, and their father didn't, you know, but that wasn't the case with my father. He really had my back. I knew him. I loved him. You know, and I almost felt like when he passed away, it's like, okay, it's my turn.
Gotcha.
You know, I have to take some of this responsibility. So it was, you know, even in writing the book, you know, even in writing the book, there's a lot of my father and your father and a lot of men in there that kind of miss the boat. They don't take care of the people that are going to take care of them when they get older,
mm-hmm.
because they don't understand that they're going to get older.
Gotcha. And you know what? And it's interesting because it's that expectation.
Right.
And as you're speaking on that, I watch my son, and he's still grieving his father because they did not have a healthy relationship.
Right.
And I think it was like 22 years had passed since my son saw his father. And my son was dealing with like, well, why did you call me now? Why did you wait
right.
till you get sick and dying, and now you want me to be stuck holding the pieces? And it was
right.
crazy because I kept trying to tell my son, don't get stuck with that body. Don't get stuck with that body. But, hell, we see how life happened. It kind of backfired and blew up in my face.
Right.
And I did. I kept telling my son, don't sign
yeah.
no papers. Don't get stuck
right.
with that body. Shoot. No more than 2 weeks later, I'm like, see, I should have kept my mouth closed. But it's all good. So the next thing is the depression. Now, the depression is the sadness, and that sadness set in as you begin to understand the loss and its effect on your life. Now, there are signs of depression, and this is when individuals also, I want the listeners to pay attention to, because you need to make sure it's okay to be depressed, but don't stay depressed.
Right.
And if your depression turns into suicidal thoughts, and you start feeling like you can't live without this person and you want to take your own life, you can call a crisis hotline. You can call 211. You may need to go seek psychiatric assistance in order to be given some antidepressant medications. But please pay attention. And those that are close to individuals, especially with my board member. When my board member passed, Cedric, he had been married to his wife for 60 years.
Wow.
That is
Definitely.
A long time
yeah.
to be married. And I need to go check up on her because some people numb out. And I don't know what life is going to be like for her when you've had that same person around you for 60-something years and he
right.
passes before you. Now, signs of depression can include crying, sleep issues, a decrease of appetite. Individuals may feel overwhelmed, regretful, and lonely. And as I was doing my research, I found that there is a 70% increase in the death risk of a surviving spouse, especially based on their relationship. Another effect that can occur not only with the depression is the anxiety, because within the first year after the death of a loved one, you and most people, I would say you in general, but most individuals will experience anxiety or depression because they're going to be dealing with something. And the problem with that is when you start looking at that prolonged grief. So, if you start noticing signs of depression, anxiety, get some help, find somebody to talk to. There's also support groups that individuals can go to and they can join. You can go online. They have places where you can go and you can blog. And they have, like, parents of surviving parents of adult children. They have, if a family member passed away from cancer, America's Cancer Association, they do a lot of work with individuals that are grieving. The internet can be a very useful tool to Google and find support groups in your area or someone to reach out to talk to about how you're feeling and what you're going through. And again, it is normal. The last stage with the five stages is the acceptance. Now, in this final stage of grief, individuals accept the reality of the loss. It can't be changed. Although the individuals may still feel sad, they're able to start moving forward with their life. Now, that is that process with the five stages, and I think that when as I was looking at my information, those five stages, the only difference is, like I said, the shock or disbelief, and with the acceptance come hope. See, there's a difference between accepting it and feeling hopeless and accepting it and feeling hopeful. Because when my mother passed, I was hopeful because I knew I had to learn to live life without my mother. And to be honest with you, Cedric, I think living life without my grandmother was tougher for me, meaning my mother's mother, than it was trying to live my life without my mother. Because I was already prepared. When my grandmother passed, it was kind of like a shock. Right. But by that same token, she gave us signs, but we weren't paying any attention because we always thought Mama was going to always be there.
Right.
So to get that phone call, and when I learned about my grandmother passing, I was driving a school bus. And here I am driving a bus with a whole bunch of kids on my bus. I get a radio call telling me, Jeanette, your grandmother just died. I'm like, what the hell?
Well, first off, that's totally inappropriate. They should have waited until you parked. They should have pulled you to the side. They should have, you know, taken care of that in a way that was going to be safe for you and the students.
Correct.
So I'm real big on time and place. There's a time and place for everything. I can't tell my wife everything all the time the second that I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be in a situation where she's safe, I'm safe, everybody's in a good place, and then we can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing about the death process, is that you just don't want to spring it on somebody when they're in jail and, you know, they're calling, how's everybody doing? Oh, your mother and father are shot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What? And I'm in jail, you know. If you're going to do that, you at least got to come in and do a visit, and you got, you know what I'm saying?
Correct.
Like, there's ways to go about it, and you know, God bless them. I just don't think that was the best way to go about it.
Correct.
And you know what?
It was crazy because some of the kids that played on my basketball team, they were on the bus, and they knew my grandmother, and they just came up to me and was like, are you okay? And I started crying, but I knew I had to get them kids to a safe place.
Right.
But in a way, it prepared me. Because when I had to deal with the passing of my mother, my father, and everybody else, now my daughter calls me a funeral junkie. She said, Mom, all you do is go to funerals. You just like going to funerals. And I used to say, it's sad because I go because I'd be ready to go to the repast so I can go eat. And I used to tell my clients, If you pass, I'm going to your funeral, but y'all better have some food, because if y'all ain't got no food,
right.
I'm going to be mad. So, but it did prepare me. It kind of set the stage. And, you know, and then prior to my grandmother passing, I had two uncles that were murdered. And they were murdered at the age of 25. So I was prepared. I was very prepared,
right.
And that helped a lot. Now, I want to go, Cedric, and I want to talk about, when we talk about coping, and we talk about coping skills, and I want to say, as I'm trying to get some information, I don't know if anyone's calling in, because my internet is down, so I'm using other means, but if you do want to call in, or you want to share something, you can give me a call at 516-387-1914. Or you can find me, or you can send me an email at jabneylmft@gmail.com. Again, my name is Jeanette Abney. I am a licensed therapist, and I am the owner of J.A. Precious, Inc., located in Oceanside, California. I'm also the owner of the Center for the Treatment of Addiction, located in Orange County, with several different offices. I have an office in the city of Fullerton, the city of Garden Grove, the city of Huntington Beach, and I'm also operating in Marietta, which is in Riverside County. And I know you say, Cedric, how in the heck are you doing all of this? But you know what? To be honest with you, I am really going to have to slow my butt down. Cause,
yeah, it's probably a good idea, Jeanette.
I am.
Yeah. Probably a good idea. Eight offices. I don't know if that's necessary.
Ooh, Lord, you know.
Run yourself into the ground, girl.
But you know what? It gets me going. It really gets me going. I don't even think about it. I just do it. And
you.
People tell me, Jeanette, you make me tired. Just listening to what you do makes me literally tired.
Well,
and I don't even think it's a big deal. I'll be like, oh, I got to do this, you know. And because I'm so used to it, but
yeah, you've built up the endurance to handle it, you know.
Correct.
That's got a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Now, I had some information, and I want to talk about some of the things to say, some of the things not to say, because a lot of times when individuals are grieving, and like I said, there is no set time of how long you're supposed to grieve. So don't get caught up in what other people think you're supposed to do. And a lot of times we do that. I had a person say to me before, when their child had passed away, people were watching him. And as they was watching him, it was like as if they wasn't crying, or, you know, the person had numbed themselves. And they was dealing with the guilt. They was feeling bad, like, am I doing it right? Or what do people expect of me? Now, with the process being a process, it is just that. It is a process. So don't worry about what other people say, what other people think, because it's really about your relationship with the individual that matters and how you hold on to whatever it is that you and that person, the relationship that you guys had. I think that that is very valuable. What do you think about that, Cedric?
Yeah, everybody grieves differently. You know, some of us, we try to channel it. Like for me, you know, being a writer, it's good for me and it's good for my writing when, like, bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, you know, because then I consider it like the Mary J. Blige effect. You know, when she dropped My Life, you know, she was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was on drugs and bad relationships and unloved. And so she drops My Life, which is, you know, the modern day, for me, it's modern day what's going on in terms of the depth of the pain that she brought, excuse me, in the album. So she actually channeled it in a productive way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what I tried to do with my grief. With my dad, you know, and my grief with, you know, not having children, I try to channel that in a way that's going to be helpful for others,
mm-hmm.
and you know, help them work through it too. So I mean, it's coming. It's definitely coming. The grief and the sadness is definitely coming. It's just what you do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can kind of channel it productively into something that you really love or something that, you know, dedicate, I don't know, a charity. You know, your mother passed away from cancer, so, you know, maybe doing work like that, just really staying productive and just using that energy that it does give you, and you try to use it in a positive light.
And you know what? And that is true, because a lot of times individuals don't know what to do. Now, before I even go into the what not to say, I found some information, and it's called The Task of Grief. And it kind of brought me to when you said Mary J. Blige, and I thought of her, like you said, her song No More Tears, too. And they have the acronym, and it's spelled T-E-A-R. T is to accept the reality of the loss. E, experience the pain of the loss. A, adjust to the new environment without the person. And R, reinvest in the new reality. And that is powerful, because even when I was talking about the passing or the death of a person when they have been married for years, it's interesting because most men will remarry within a year of the passing of their wife. And it said, it used to be a joke to say, and it would say, it said that most men that are widows find their next wife at the funeral. Because they're going to be waiting. They'll be like, oh, sister so-and-so done passed on. Oh, he can't be by. They're bringing pies. They're bringing cake. They're trying to feed the man. That's so tacky. That is so tacky. Women may never remarry because Coretta Scott, when people say they don't want to have to go behind Martin Luther King, you know, how you going to be married to Coretta Scott after the death of her husband? You know, the Kennedy, she remarried, but some individuals or some women may not remarry as soon because they may grieve a little different. And sometimes they're so worried about what other people are going to say.
Right.
Now, these are some information, and this information, and it basically says 9 things you should never say to a grieving person. And this was written by Liz Steelman. And it indicates when someone dies, the first steps are pretty clear. You fill the family refrigerator with meals. You go to the funeral or attend a viewing. You send bereavement cards. But after that initial period of the process tends to strip off, we don't want to remind the person of the loss and the fact that he or she is grieving. So they have some information within the online community, and these are some of the things that they indicate what not to say. How are you doing? But do you know that's the first thing most people say, Cedric? How you doing?
Of course.
How are you supposed to answer that? It's like, what the hell you mean how I'm doing? I'm doing, I'm living, I'm breathing.
Yeah.
Or you know what, I tell people, you don't even want to know. I walked in my office was a hot mess. And so like I said, the first thing they say is, how are you doing? When you offer this warm well phrase, which they indicate, the person is most likely hearing something different. Something like, please tell me you're doing okay. Because it's uncomfortable if you say you're not doing well.
Right.
But, and like I said, it goes up back to the fine, which is effed up, insecure, needy, and emotional.
Well, you know, people want it to be okay, so they don't have to deal with it. I had a situation once where I was playing golf, and I was in a clubhouse, and this old guy, his eyes just rolled back in his head like a slot machine. He was clearly out of it. He was, like, in and out of consciousness. And I was like, sir, are you okay? And when he came back out of it, he was like, yeah, I'm fine. I need a beer and this and that. And I was like, nah, that's not going to be good enough. So I told the clubhouse to call an ambulance, right? They're like, no, don't do it. And his friends were like, you know, Dale, are you okay? Yeah, he said he's okay. I was like, no, can't do it. So when the ambulance came, they checked his vitals. He was in some sort of distress, right? And one of his friends said, I'm glad somebody here was strong enough to stop him. And I was like, it wasn't so much that I was strong enough to stop him. It's just that I wasn't going to let him say, I'm okay. It's okay, when he clearly wasn't. You know what I mean? So I get the whole, when people ask you are they're okay, they really want you to say, yeah, I'm fine.
Correct.
They really don't even want you to get into that.
Correct. And this is something you could say to the person instead of saying it. You can say, it's really tough right now for you. When you acknowledge what they're going through right now, It's very painful. And they say, don't gloss over their feelings, but let them have a chance to grieve fully and without judgment. Because a lot of times people feel like they're going to be judged. Another thing, what not to say, and this one, oh, my God, so they do this all the time. Well, you know they're in a better place. How the hell do you know? During such a confusing and personal time, it's better to be cautious than to assume the belief system that the griever might not subscribe to in regard to whatever your religious or beliefs are. I'll never forget this, Cedric. When my mother was transitioning, my sister was in there praying over my mother. And she was like, take this cancer, da-da-da-da-da-da. Take this cancer. And I mean, she was preaching and talking and probably was drunk all at the same time. My sister said, take that cancer to hell with you. I said, do you just realize you just preached your mama to hell? So she said, she looked at me and said, oh.
She was probably full blown. Yeah,
man, you just preached your mama straight to hell, you know.
Right.
But the thing is, and people do that. So, in other words, by saying that they're in a better place now, what you can say is, I'm sorry you're suffering. Because certainly that person is glad that their loved one is not suffering anymore. But that doesn't make the pain any different. Focus on the person who's experiencing the pain at the moment. So you're no longer talking about the person that has passed. You're talking about the person that is alive by saying, you know what, maybe you might want to talk to someone, or, you know, I see that you're in a lot of pain. But focus on that person. Now, another thing what not to say is, oh, this is another one. Please let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Pay the bill. You know, so, you know, but the thing is, you say, people say that, but they know good well they really don't want to be having to do nothing.
Nope.
But everyone reaching out will offer support, and that can be overwhelming. It also puts the responsibility on the bereaved to basically reach out for help. So instead of saying, let me know if there's anything I could do, and then they tell you something and you don't want to do it, instead you can say, I'll come over to do a few loads of laundry, or I'll drive carpool for you for the next month. Let them know what you go do, not try to get that person to tell you what to do, because sometimes people be so confused, they don't know what even needs to be done.
Right.
So people are more willing to, people are more willing to accept support if it's specific rather than what's called wide open offer. Another thing is what not to say, you can always, what do you mean you can always? And you find that, with, especially with kids. Well, you can always have another child.
Right.
Or you can always get another dog. But that ain't the dog that I want, you know. So if someone loses a partner or a child, and you might tell them that they can always get remarried or have another child, or thinking that you're helping them, that's a silver lining. You don't want to do that. Instead, you can say, tell me about your loved one. Meaning, when dealing with the present pain of the loss, it can be hard to look towards the future that's full of unknowns, but it helps if you just let them talk about the memories. Another thing is, what not to say? Don't tell them you know how they feel. Because everyone will at some time experience a loss. It's an overwhelming personal experience, but you will never truly be able to know how someone experienced that loss. And claiming that you do can feel invalidating. So instead you can say, I can imagine how you're feeling.
Right.
But don't tell them how you know. And another thing we're not to say, this all happens eventually. Now, we know we was all born to die. Somebody say something, does anybody want to hear that?
Right.
Another one, maybe they wanted it this way. We always say that the way people live is the way people die, but instead you could say, I like to honor them this way. So just, and these things can go on and on and on and on, but they always say, if you don't have nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. Don't put your, stick your foot in your mouth.
Right.
Because sometimes people can make it worse, and then what happens is then that person becomes mad at you because they will displace their anger onto you. Well, you know so-and-so said, or da-da-da-da-da, and it's really not appropriate at that time. Now, we only have about 10 minutes left on the show, And I want to let individuals know that when we talk about grief, when we talk about mourning, grief, again, is a natural response to the loss. It's the emotional suffering individuals feel when someone is taken away. And a lot of times we always affiliate it with just the death. But when we mourn, it refers to how someone may feel about that person. And, you know, I like now, Cedric, when we was a kid, I was telling my friend how we was kind of taught to cry at funerals, and now some people don't cry. And one of the things we've done is we changed it from a funeral, a sad service, but a celebration of life, where you bring joy, where you let that spirit be in a room, you talk about the good times, and that takes away and dries your tears up to let somebody know that they were loved. When we went to my son's father's funeral, oh, my God, Cedric, it was so horrible. My son told me, Mom, we didn't even have enough people to even carry the body. I said, well, I wasn't carrying it because I had to go use the bathroom. And that would have been the last thing I needed to do was carry his casket, you know. But when people come out, when they care about you, they will come out to celebrate your life.
Right.
And I think even at my father's funeral, there was one guy, and I got to find out if it was the guy that came from Compton, but he said, I've never spoke at a funeral, but I had to come speak at this one.
Right.
That's how you know that people, and when they're mourning, when they got something to say, when they want you to know, this is how I feel about this person, that's the mourning process. And a lot of times it has stuff to – it can have a lot to do with your cultural beliefs, with your rituals. It can be very confusing for some. But how you mourn or how you grieve is very personal because you go do it your way. Now, again, talking about what causes grief, it's not clear, but we want to make sure that it's not prolonged or complicated. If it is, you need to get some help. But these are some of the best ways to grieve. So for those of you that have lost a loved one, for those of you that are going through some things, number one, express yourself. Express yourself in a way that's healthy. Do not do things that is unhealthy, but do express yourself. Find someone to talk to. Call a counselor. Go to therapy. Reach out to your pastor, a close friend, but do express yourself. Number two, allow yourself to feel sad. If you want to feel sad, feel sad, but you don't have to stay sad. Number three, keep up with your routine. Don't stop doing what you used to do, whether it's a hobby, whether it's going to work, whatever your routine is, keep up your routine. Number four, get you some sleep. A lot of times, Cedric, people suffer from sleep deprivation.
Right.
Number five, eat healthy. You don't want to gain all that weight and then be talking about, well, so-and-so died, and not because so-and-so died, I weigh 500 pounds. You know, you don't want to use that. And I got to say, too, my friend was getting on me because I was eating like a pig. He going to tell me, well, you can't eat no fast food. I'm like, but I'm going to eat. Because one thing about me, I don't care who died, I don't care what happened. It do not affect my appetite. I will
something
go get digested. Man, Cedric, when he said I couldn't go to eat fast food, first thing I did, I went to go grocery shopping. Well, if I can't eat out, I'm gonna make sure we get to eat. We gonna cook breakfast, we gonna cook lunch, we gonna cook dinner. I'm gonna have me some food somewhere.
Yeah.
We gotta go to the restaurant, but somebody gonna cook around here. But you do have to eat healthy, and you know, make sure you watch your appetite. Number six. Avoid things that numb the pain. A lot of times, Cedric, I don't know why, when people die, you find more alcohol than you find food.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
Man, people want to drink. They want to smoke weed. They want to. It's like, that ain't going to bring the person back. All that's going to do is get you in trouble.
Right.
But numbing.
A star fight.
Man, oh, yes, it does. You did this and you did that. And remember when you. Because, see, that becomes the liquid courage. So avoid things that numb the pain. Don't be sitting up there getting drunk, feeling sorry for yourself, slipping into depression. Don't be out trying to get high, talking about because grandma died. You know. So avoid that. Number seven, go to counseling if it feels right for you. or perhaps right away, but go talk to somebody. Cedric, we have about 5 minutes left on the show.
Uh-huh.
What do you want to share with the listeners as we talk about grief, loss, and mourning? Because, like I said, even in the music industry, entertainment, and sometimes, and it's interesting because we're talking about our parents. But I remember when Prince died, when Michael Jackson died, when certain presidents die, the country mourns. People mourn. Fans mourn. So sometimes you don't even have to know that person or have a personal relationship to grieve or mourn because you feel bad for their family. What advice and what do you want to offer or share with the listeners in regards to that?
In terms of grief over, like, celebrities or just grief?
Either celebrities or understanding. Someone is calling in. Let me log this person in right quick.
Okay.
Hi, this is Jeanette Abney. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. How are you doing?
Hi, this is Nick, Jeanette.
Hi, Nick. How you doing? We only got a couple of minutes left on the show. You want to say something before I let Cedric close us out?
No, I don't. I'm just listening.
Okay, no problem.
Go ahead.
Okay, Cedric, yeah, like I said, sometimes our country mourns. Sometimes, you know, like I said, especially with Prince. When Prince passed away, oh, my God, it was purple rain everywhere, you know, and just mourning. So what advice would you offer individuals?
Just allow yourself to be sad. You know what I mean? Because it's natural to be sad. You don't have to numb up with alcohol or pills or drugs or whatever. The problem is a lot of times now we don't want to feel like what we're going through. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to, you know, be bummed out. It's okay to, it's still okay to laugh. It's okay to smile, you know. I just think that, you know, the way you handled your father's funeral, Jeanette, was I thought you handled it beautifully, and you know, I took a lot of inspiration and solace for the way that you handled a very difficult situation with your father, and I was very impressed. And Allison was also very impressed that you were in a very difficult situation, and you kept your held very high, and I think everybody involved appreciated that.
I appreciated you, Cedric, because between you and my friend, y'all had to be my rock. Because, ooh-wee.
Yeah.
All I could say was, I got to go to Cedric. Because you know what? I look at it like this. They don't like you no more than they like me.
I know I got on the crap list, man. I don't know.
It's all good, Cedric.
I'm on it, girl. We're on there together.
You know what? And that's why God gave us favor. That's why we are who we are, and I'm okay with being different. I'm okay with being special. I'm okay with being talked about because all that do is motivate me. That lets me know that you're thinking about me, and that's going to motivate me to a higher place and a higher position, and I'm okay with that. I'm good. Because I tried to get my auntie Samantha to come to the funeral, and Samantha was like, I'm not coming. I was like, okay, how about go? But it got through it. I'm good. I am so good. And I appreciate it. What you say, Nick?
Nothing. I'll just listen.
So one of the things, like I said, Cedric, I appreciate you. I appreciate Allison. I appreciate those of his family members that came down for his celebration, including his friends. I mean, we did what we had to do, and that was just the bottom line with that. Now, next week's show, because January is Human Sex Trafficking Awareness Month, I'm going to contact the lady that was on the show with me before and see if she wants to come back on. But I want to talk about human sex trafficking again, because especially when we're talking about our teenagers. So join me, Jeanette Abney, next week at Blog Talk Radio, as we're going to be talking about ending human sex trafficking, because when people are aware and when you know better, you do better. So, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for being for all of your support out there. I apologize to those of you that I was driving you crazy on Messenger, but I couldn't figure out how to work the Facebook thing. But until next week, join me again for another episode at Precious Predicaments Blog Talk Radio as we talk about ending human sex trafficking. Thank you, cousin. Thank you, Nick, for calling.
Problem.
Okay.
No problem, Jeanette.
All right.
Love you.
Love you too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.